Hi, it's me, Abigail Moritz, with Rabbi Miriam Berger, and we're going to talk about Shavuot, which is my favourite festival, but clearly in the moments just before the podcast week, turns out not yours.
Well, I'm not averse to it, but if you think about the kind of the numbers and things like that, it is one of the three pilgrim festivals, and I think of the three, it's probably the poor relative. Why is it your favourite?
It has everything. For me, it has cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
It has stories about women and women's friendships and relationships. It has learning. And it has the idea of marriage and revelation and the covenant.
All right. Well, there you go. I think you just summed up the entire podcast in a sentence. Should we backtrack a little and just give people an overview?
Yes. Well, that's what I was going to say. Is I was thinking it is the sort of less loved relative. And would you? I mean, I bet there are lots of people listening who might not even have heard of it, or maybe have vaguely heard of it. But certainly, as you're absolutely right, it's the least popular one. To tell us what it's about and what are some of the things that are associated with it.
So we have three pilgrim festivals in the year, Sukkot, Pesach and Shavuot. And this one is focused around the barley harvest. So for some, it is that kind of agricultural festival, celebration of the first fruits and that sense of what it would have meant to have made that pilgrimage and had the relief of another harvest that was successful would have been the celebration. But as each of our pilgrim festivals also is part of the kind of Torah narrative as well, we go from Pesach, which was the liberation from slavery in Egypt, to here we are now in the wilderness, and Shavuot marks the Sinai moment of revelation, and it's that Matan Torah Tenu, the celebration of receiving Torah.
And we've had 7 weeks since our last podcast. Have we not? Because that's what we do.
Counted every day that we've been apart, Abigail.
Thank you. And I just wondered, I suppose I was going to ask you about revelations and what kind of things you've thought about during that time. And particularly in terms of, I know we've done some, there's been some actual dunkings as well for Wellspring.
Indeed. So we've been on a nice journey, really, through the months that have got us now to Shavuot. So the journey begins with that sense of what are we looking for liberation from, taking us into the month of Iyar, where the essence of that name comes from these kind of the glimmers, the images, the twinkly bits of spring that start to emerge and show us that even when things are difficult, there is still hope. Because there isn't that sense of, well, we get liberated into perfection, but a real understanding of there's a huge journey ahead. And here we are in the month of Sivan, in this next kind of milestone moment, that really talks about this sense of what happens at this moment, at this fixed time, what gives us our anchors and our kind of, I guess, the safety belt, the life ring thrown at us at these moments. And for me, the beauty of Shavuot, I think, is the moment on the journey, that so often when life is difficult, we expect, you know, if you've been in a bad marriage and you get divorced, or you come out of that relationship, or if you've had a cancer journey and you've finished your treatment, there's often a sense of, well, this is the end, this should be fine now. And rarely is it just the end and kind of everything's perfect and everything's fine. It takes our bodies a long time to repair. It takes our emotions a long time to repair. So what Shavuot gifts us, I think, is a moment on the journey, and a really impactful moment on the journey, to be able to look back and say, I've come a long way, and to be able to sort of embolden oneself, strengthen oneself for, but there's still a long way to go. And I think that message of Shavuot is a really important one, that it's not always about the destination. Sometimes it's about being able to look back and know how far you've come. And when we use the Israelites in the wilderness as a kind of motif for that, really, they've come a long way. They've been a group of slaves with nothing who, if nothing else, have managed to stay alive for these weeks in the wilderness. And what they're being gifted at Shavuot is a framework to live by and the rules to live by. And okay, that kind of gives them the tools that they need for the next bit of the journey. So maybe sometimes we just need to look at that piece of revelation of what are the tools I need to help me on the next bit of the journey.
And tell me a little bit about how Wellspring seek to do that, and how, what we've been doing with having dips in Hampstead Ladies Pond.
So that idea that water is the peace that comes with us at all these moments, to be able to say, how can we mark time? How can we mark these moments? We have taken the moment also combining it with Rosh Chodesh, the celebration of the new moon, which again is another cycle. For me, it's all about looking for the natural cycles in our own personal lives, in the world around us, whether it's a Jewish time frame or whether it's a kind of environmental time frame, a natural time frame, or one that works within our own bodies, like the menstrual cycle. What is it that gives us these moments to be able to mark time and to be able to say, okay, I'm another month on. What did I want to be changing? Where do I want to be heading? Am I still on the right path? Do I feel I've made any progress? Where am I heading to? So that sense of being able to use immersion in water is very much what Wellspring is about. That sense that actually the ancient ritual of mikveh is the gift that we are reclaiming, that idea that says, how do I know where I've been and who I was, and what do I want to be and who am I going to become?
So one of the stories at Shavuot that we often read is the story of Ruth, who basically is one of our early converts, that she was told by her mother-in-law, Naomi, to go back. And she said, no, I want to stay with you and be with you and your people and your God. And these days, we mark conversion with a mikveh for a long time. I'm not sure whether, I don't think, it's not noted whether Naomi gave Ruth one. But how much is that part of the Wellspring thing, and where do you see it fitting in?
So I love the story of Ruth and Naomi. And it doesn't need to just be about conversion. It's very much about relationships and also very much about how you deal with adversity. So the reason these women are even having this conversation is because Naomi's sons, one of whom was Ruth's husband, has died. And what Naomi is saying is, This is the end of our relationship too. I don't have another son for you to marry. So you need to go and kind of start your life again. And there is a sense, I think, after a bereavement where people do feel, well, what have I got now? Am I starting again? And what Ruth and Naomi really teach us is you can keep moving forward. It might not look like you're still on the same path. It might not be the same journey. The image that you had of your future is clearly radically different, but it's not the same as going back to square one, which is all Naomi could see for Ruth. All she was saying is, you know, I can't give you children. Your husband's died. You're back to where you were before you even got married. And there's a beauty in what Ruth is able to see, because what she says is, your people will be my people, your God, my God, where you go, I will go, and there we will be buried. A real sense of, I can still see my future. And it's because I am having these shared relationships with you. We can still be family, and we can gather the people around us that we need at this time. So yes, there's a beautiful kind of motif about of conversion there, because she's really accepting Judaism for herself. But there's something for me even more powerful in what it means to be able to do two things, which is what she did, which is be able to say, I can reimagine what my future looks like, and I can gather the people around me that I need kind of to have help me to get to that future. But also what she's saying is life doesn't have to be done to us. That sometimes in moments like that, we, you know, it's also like ill health. We can sort of give ourselves up to being a slab of meat where life is done to us and the medical professionals or people around us treat us in a certain way. And there's something to be learnt, I think, in her saying, I'm accepting this for myself, not because this is who my husband was or not because you are my mother-in-law, but I'm going to take this for myself. And for me, that's what Shavuot gifts us all as a moment in time. It says, rather than life happening to you, what are you going to commit to? What are you going to say, this is who I am, and this is what I want for my life? And how many of us actually do that in our relationships, right? You know, Shavuot's got a lot of wedding imagery going on, but how many of us say to our actual partners, you know, let's recommit. Let's remember why we ever got married in the first place. Let's remind ourselves that we're choosing to be in relationship with our partners, our friends, our place of work, whatever it is. But when we feel we're re-accepting it every day, every week, every month, perhaps we are in a better relationship with it.
And you take people for mikvah, don't you? Both for conversion, but also pre-wedding and thing. Is there a different quality or does it depend on the person? Or is there something fundamentally different about the way that somebody approaches a mikveh when they're coming, thinking about, they're marking their coming to Judaism and they're marking their end of their single life and the beginning of their married life?
In a way, they're really similar because in both of those moments, there's nothing about washing away the past. I think for some people, there's a sense of, you know, surely when you're converting and using water in that way, there's something about sort of cleansing yourself from your non-Jewish past. And I don't see it like that at all. I see it much more as I do pre-wedding, that sense of how am I informed by my past and how has that made me who I am today? And what am I becoming? What are my hopes and my dreams for the future? So there's really similar qualities in that sense of kind of who or what we're making a commitment to, whether it is somebody pre-wedding saying, this is my moment alone to commit to that which I want to become in relationship with another. You don't have that pre-wedding immersion with your partner. It's a personal moment of kind of being, as it were, kind of reborn into this new life, into this new relationship. And I think that's the same for the person converting. There's something about what does it mean to kind of actively on my own say, this is who I am now. This is what I want to become.
I think that's really beautiful. And both of them are taking on a responsibility in both cases, as you're saying, freedom from and freedom, you know, to. But also they're a big leap into the unknown in a way, aren't they? Slightly. I mean, like the revelation then was preceded by a lot of years in the wilderness after we got the Ten Commandments, wasn't it? And in a way, you don't know. You have lots of hopes for your wedding and you have lots of hope maybe for your Jewish life, but that's also an unknown quantity.
Right. And I think it's the lack of map ahead, right? I love, there's a lot of Midrashim about God holding the mountain over the heads of the Israelites. And often that's seen in those Midrashim as quite a threatening purpose. You know, you will accept this covenant. But there are beautiful Midrashim that reframe that mountain above as the chuppah. So actually the Israelites are kind of standing under the chuppah of Mount Sinai to go into this relationship. And I think in both instances of whether it's that moment of a religious one or whether it's about a partnership and a marriage in that way, there's something about being able to say, I've got enough faith in my partner and in our relationship and our commitment to each other, that knowing it's a little bit uncharted ahead, knowing that even if we have a really fixed idea of what married life is going to look like, it's unlikely to look like that. There's something about being able to say, as long as you're by my side, we'll do this together. And in a way, that's, you know, maybe why the Ruth and Naomi relationship is so beautiful, because it's an unusual other partner, right? Your mother-in-law, daughter-in-law is not usually the, like, as long as we're together, we're going to be okay. But maybe when you've been through something as traumatic as the loss of, you know, their husbands, plural, and therefore Ruth's son, Naomi's son, there's something about, we've been through so much, let's journey together.
Can we talk a little bit about cheesecake?
Definitely. Okay. Let's definitely talk about cheesecake, because I think that dairy piece is important. Go on.
Well, no, I mean, it's another reason that I think people should embrace Shavuot, because it's a very good thing on every level, I think.
Absolutely. And in this protein-filled world where everyone's being, encouraged to have as many grams of protein as possible, there's all sorts of cheesecake recipes out there. I'm feeling like the internet's gone very Jewish in that sense of encouraging us to eat cheesecake. But I think there's a much nicer wellness, well-being image in that dairy feast, right? Because for as many people who've given kind of reasons for eating dairy on Shavuot.
There
are 101 of them. So it's possible, like some people say, it's because we only received the rules of Kashrut there at Sinai. So any meat that had been prepared for this exciting event ahead of time, the Israelites then realized they couldn't eat because it hadn't been prepared according to the rules of Kashrut. Or that on that day, we were sort of as innocent as newborns, right? It was like we were newly born into this kind of new world of a life ordained by Torah. And therefore, we were innocent like newborns, therefore kind of suckling on milk. There's the gematria of chalav, which is the gematria, each letter in Hebrew has a numeric value. And if you take the numeric value of chalav, you get 8 plus 30 plus 2, which is 40 years in the wilderness, or 40 days that Moses was at Mount Sinai. Uh-huh. So all of these things that you might feel a little tenuous for any of us. And actually, the thing I love is that if you look at what's plentiful at this time of year, where in the spring lambs will have been born and kind of there will be plenty of milk, animals to be nourishing their young and able to be milked, plentifully, that actually maybe there's just a reminder of making celebratory that which you have. And when you're recommitting yourself to Torah, to your Judaism, to the things that we take for granted, maybe there's something in that message of, look what you have around you, look what is plentiful, and see the blessings in that, right? That this isn't the moment to be, celebrating with something cold when it's getting warm, or something that isn't around, that this isn't the message of strive for something that's unobtainable. We're unlikely to have our Sinai moment again. Like, this isn't about hoping that you will have this great kind of ethereal revelation that's out there and beyond us, but actually see what's going on in our closer worlds and see the celebrations in that.
That's lovely. That's like our daily blessings. I just appreciate what we've got. I have to say that it does chime in with what I was taught. I think my parents taught me, my dad said, which was partly that it's a fantastic thing, the God giving us the Torah, the Ten Commandments and the covenant. And so you want to celebrate it in the nicest way possible, and the nicest thing in the world is cheesecake.
But that's also because I know that your mum makes an excellent cheesecake. And so maybe he was slightly biased, because other people would have said, but my mum's honey cake on Rosh Hashanah was better than the Shavuot cheesecake. But I think that's very much a family message, because your mum's cheesecake was certainly legendary at FRS.
So what other links of well-being does Shavuot have for you, do you think?
So I think there's something particularly around this concept of revelation as well, which I know that Marianne Taylor, who was our sleep consultant on and ran some sessions for us and did a wonderful podcast on sleep, will not advocate for us staying up all night on Shavuot to study. But maybe there is a message in there about what we're open to. So some people say we stay up all night as this Tikkun Leil Shavuot. Tikkun means repair. And so what are we repairing by staying up all night to study? Apparently some of the Israelites were late to Revelation and weren't ready. And so we, to avoid ever being accused of not being ready for God, stay up all night so we can't be late for the moment of Revelation. But also there's just a concept of by being awake and alert for this whole 24-hour period of Shavuot, there's something about that reminder of being open to, being made to feel that there are lessons out there, there are teachings available to us that might just change our outlook on life, who we are, what's going on. I don't think there will be thunder and lightning and shofar blasts on the mountain and clouds and smoke, but actually maybe when we have the right frame of mind, some of those revelatory experiences come with a lot less of that pomp and ceremony and are a lot more internalized, but we don't hear it if we're not open to it. And I'm not sure if I'm talking with a divine hat or not a divine sense in that, but I think there's something definitely to be open to other ideas, other people, other ways. You know, we're living more and more in a world where ideas are siloed, where we speak and communicate and listen to people within our own sphere of the people we agree with. And what does it mean to have that reminder of being open to other ideas and other points of view this Shavuot?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is that one of those things about the five pillars of well-being. And one of them is lifelong learning and is really embracing that really good for you at whatever age to keep learning new stuff. So that's a really lovely thing that Judaism implants it so firmly in the whole of the religion, but particularly reminds us of Shavuot that you felt.
As well as being given a routine, right? And so, you know, obviously staying up all night is not a good example of a routine, but being what Shavuot is marking is the being given of all these rules that do give us that kind of routine. And I think there is definitely a sense of it being good for our well-being when we make ourselves, you know, get up and start our day at a particular time, have those different anchor points throughout the day and get a good night's sleep. All of that stuff, which Marianne would be much more advocating, I think is built in so much to the rules and the framework that are given in that kind of sense of what Shavuot is emulating.
So why, when it's got so many great things, isn't it better supported? Why is it the poor relation, do you think?
Well, there's not a big, you know, Sukkot comes with a great building kind of element to it. You don't get to be creative and build your sukkah like you did on Sukkot. You don't get to invite people over and do that both on Pesach and Sukkot. There's so much about, well, who are you sharing this moment with? And I think there's something that both of those festivals happens predominantly in the home as well, right? So the whether it's the Pesach Seder or whether it's your Ushpizin are, who you're inviting as your guests to your sukkah, there's something about Shavuot being much more synagogue-based. And maybe what we're being told is actually by throwing Judaism back into the home, we're giving people much more that they can anchor too. So maybe we need to find people, you know, I wonder how many cheesecakes are being made without any other aspects of Shavuot being adhered to, but that gives you the peace that's done at home.
That's done at home. Are there other things that you want to add about Shavuot?
I think that one of the sort of the only other piece I would perhaps say is the universalistic piece that comes with Shavuot, which might sound funny to say when it's all about this kind of the receiving of Torah or Mount Sinai, and it feels like it's very particularistic. But it isn't the Jews that siphoned off this concept of the Ten Commandments. Actually, that's a kind of a Christian delineation, and that imagery of actually the Aseret Dibrot, the 10 statements, being given this elevated sense, this elevated place within society, stretches well beyond Judaism. But the image of Shavuot is very much the receiving of the Ten Commandments. And I wonder if we focused a bit more on them rather than kind of the Torah in general, there's much more of a universalistic message of how do those 10 rules bring out actually what is important to everybody, what creates the best of society and the best of relationships. So whether it is the kind of the sense of reminding ourselves that we live in a world now where it's so easy to have windows into other people's lives and be jealous of what other people have, and constantly be living in a cycle of wanting what other people have, and that reminder of not coveting our neighbor's ox or ass or their, you know, or their wives, is maybe something that could speak for many of us to give us a better sense of our own self and well-being if we manage to temper some of that sense of wanting what other people have. The angle it gives us on relationships, whether that is about, you know, honoring our parents and what that means to self-check relationships we're in, whether it's about being given a work-life balance with the rules of Shabbat, I think there's just a real essence of well-being built into those 10 statements. And maybe that's a good place for us all to start by thinking about if we were going to use Shavuot as a marker in time, or this month to be the what do I want from life, maybe some of those elements are a good place to start.
It's a lovely place to start and a lovely place to end our podcast. Thank you very much, Miriam.
Thank you.